If you have the source sheet in front of you, we'll work off of the source sheet. The Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia that Rav makes an interesting statement. Rav had some sort of scientific knowledge, and based on that, he used to do post-mortem studies on people in the cemetery, and he comments that Amar Tisha V'Tisha Ba'ayin Rav Achas B'Derech Eretz. Of all the people that were died, 99 out of 100 died from Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara is the worst disease out there. It cannot be avoided even with a mask. And in fact, 99% of the people ultimately die from it. Very interesting idea. What is an Ayin Hara? So just a little basic background. What an Ayin Hara is an idea that that obviously it's not healthy to be jealous. If I am jealous of somebody, I am what we say in the colloquial, I give you an Ayin Hara. What does that mean? I give you an Ayin Hara. So the way it's explained is that obviously to be jealous is not a healthy thing for a person. It's, of course, psychologically not healthy. Halachically, it's not healthy. We, of course, understand that Ezehu Ashir HaSameach B'chelko, that the person who is truly wealthy is somebody who is happy with God, with what God has given him. And therefore, obviously, it's a Mida Maguna. It's a very bad character trait for somebody to have to be an Ayin Ra, to be jealous of somebody else. But this goes beyond that. It assumes that not only if I am a jealous person does that hurt me, but somehow or another that hurts you as well. I am giving you the Ayin Hara, as we say, that somehow my looking at you jealously has a very negative effect on you. That is what an Ayin Ra, that's what an Ayin Hara is. And that's why, in fact, we say in Hebrew, B'li Ayin Hara, that you have beautiful children, I'm not being jealous of you, I don't want to hurt you in any way. Or in Yiddish, well, people say Kanayin Hara, there's no such word as Kanayin, it's Kain Ayin Hara. That's the same, it's a Yiddish equivalent of B'li Ayin Hara. Same idea, I don't want to give you an Ayin Hara. This idea of Ayin Haras is taken very seriously by Halacha. Just to give you an example, the Gemara at the beginning of Baba Basra gives the following case. Let's say, for example, the Gemara is discussing that we're neighbors. So what makes us good neighbors? Good fences. So there's a fence between us. I live in a ranch house. You live in a ranch house. And we have a fence in between. You decide that all of a sudden that you want to hit a second roof floor on your house. You're expanding. Baruch Hashem, your family's growing. You're doing well financially. You're gonna build up. Now you can look over my fence. I tell you, listen, on Shabbos afternoon, my idea of enjoying myself is I like to sunbathe. I like to sit down in my bathing suit in my backyard. And I, as long as we had a fence that was as high as your windows, I was okay. Now, if you're going to make a second floor, you're going to put windows there, you're intruding on my privacy. You've got to pay to raise the fence. You're going to raise your house, you have to raise the fence. The halacha is, yes, of course, you have a right to halachically demand that. What if not only, let's say you have a house, you have a fence, and on the other side of the fence, I don't have a house, but I have a field. And in my field, I grow whatever I grow. I grow rutabagas. So now you put on a second floor. And I say, listen, I want privacy. I don't want you to know how much I'm growing in my backyard. It's none of your business. Right? And therefore, I don't want to get an Ayin Hara. I don't want that you should be looking and seeing how much money I'm making. Do I have a right to make you raise the fence? The halacha says yes. The halacha says that also adam la'amod b'sadeh chaver b'sha shehu amed has become also. I have a right to say you don't have a right to look at me when I'm growing things. So because of that, what's the reason? Rashi says in number three, shelo yazikenu b'ayin hara. We pasken this way la'halacha. That l'halacha, I have a right to say you're going to have to pay for that fence because I'm nervous about Ayin Hara. That's really a thing. There's some basic questions about this, of course. It's really put together very nicely by the Ora Chaim HaKadosh at number four. The Ora Chaim HaKadosh asks, wait a second. We're pretty logical people. We're pretty reasonable people, us Jewish people. And we understand, of course, that there is reward and punishment. We understand that there are people out there that are good people, and then ultimately, if you're a good person, you should be blessed. Good things will happen to you. And if, unfortunately, a person is not such a good person, so if a person's not such a good person, unfortunately, the opposite is going to happen. That's the basic rundown. That's what we have. We believe in that there are cases of Tzadik Varalo and Rasha V'Tovo. There are exceptions to the rule. Sometimes or another, you're going to have somebody out there who would seem to be a good person, but that doesn't have such a good life. But by and large, right, one of the 13 basic principles of faith is Schar V'Onesh. And if I'm a good person, right, so all of you can iron hire me from today till tomorrow. Why should it make a difference? I should get what I deserve. That's the very basics of Judaism. And if I'm a bad person, if you bless me, why should that make anything any better? That's the basic question out there. We believe in Schar V'Onesh. Obviously, in the short term, we don't always see it. But in the long term, we understand that everybody gets what they deserve. So there are basically four approaches to this question, this issue. The first one is the Or HaChaim at number four, and being that we have limited time, next year begins on 10:15. Is that right, Rabbi Shur? Okay, good. So I will aim to be done by then. So the Or HaChaim says as follows. The Or HaChaim says, let's have a basic understanding on how God runs the world. Every time I do an Avera, a bolt of lightning doesn't come flying out of the heavens and hit me in the seat of the pants. But rather, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in Erech HaPayim, Hashem waits and sees to, you know, to what's going to be out there. It gives me an opportunity to do tshuva. So because of that, because Hashem is Erech HaPayim, at any time, if you would audit my books, you'd realize that unfortunately I have averas that I've never paid for, that they're on the books, and if I don't do tshuva and if I don't get myself in order, I'm going to have to pay for it. But as of now, there are debts that I owe, shall we say, to heaven that have not yet been cashed in. Now, according to the Rechaim, what happens with an ayin hara is as follows. Someone looks at me and says, oh, what a wonderful life this guy's having. He's got, you know, a wonderful family and a wonderful job, and he's living in a beautiful house, and he drives a new car. He's just living the life of Riley. Is that guy really that much better than me that he deserves that and I get this? The person turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, you know, if you are a just God, why is that guy having it so good and I'm not? This, of course, causes HaKadosh Baruch Hu to audit the books of the person who's having it so good. And inevitably, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu audits the books, he's going to find that the person does not deserve that much. And at that point, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes that realization that the person does not deserve that much, so therefore, it's going to hurt the person. So that's how ayin hara works. Ayin hara turns around and says it doesn't go against schar v'onesh, but what it does is it undermines the mechanism by which we are given extra time. At all times, we have it really a little better than we should be having it. And if a person challenges it, inevitably, on the recount, you're going to lose. So that is approach number one of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. The Marsha in number five takes a second approach. The Marsha's approach really goes back to Parshas Lech Lecha. Last week, week before last, depending how you're counting. At the very beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, Hashem gives over to Avram the Koach HaBracha, to Mevarecha, Mevarecha, Kalelcha, Or. He turns around and he says, listen, Avram, I give you the right to bless people. And I give you the opposite also as well. This koach habracha, this special ability to bless someone, it would seem passes down to Yitzhak. From Yitzhak, it's the bracha he gives over to Yaakov. And eventually it makes it to Levi, to the Kohanim and Birchas Kohanim. It's very interesting. If you look at the Parsha, Birchas Kohanim and Parshas Naso, right, it says, Yerecha Chav V'Shem V'Yishrecha Yar Shem Padalach V'Yichrecha Yisa Shem Padalach V'Simcha Shalom. We all familiar with those psukim. It says, V'Samu Shmi Al B'nei Yisrael V'Aniv Avarechem. And put my name on B'nei Yisrael and I will bless them. So Rashi says, who's the them? Rashi gets nervous with the pronouns. So Rashi offers two possibilities. One possibility is what it says is as follows. When we turn around and so the Birchas Kohanim, I'm not a Kohen. So the Kohanim go out there and they're going to bless everybody in the crowd, and everybody in the crowd is going to be blessed except for the Kohanim. No one ever gives Birchas Kohanim to the Kohanim. It's not fair. So Hashem says, don't worry. You bless B'nai Yisrael, and I will bless the Kohanim. The second approach is no. What is a bracha? Usually I give you a bracha. I give you a bracha, you should find the shidduch. I give you a bracha, you should have a long, happy life. I give you a bracha, you should have parnasa. What is a bracha? So according to the second approach, you know what a bracha is? A bracha is a tefillah. I daven on your behalf. I ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you should be healthy, that you should have a long life, that you should have parnasa. That's what I'm asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, we all know what tefillahs. There's a possibility that Hashem will listen to Hashem, and there's a possibility that Hashem won't listen. That's inevitable. Hashem will decide that this is a good idea, he'll decide it's a bad idea. So Hashem is saying, V'samu Shemiya B'nei Yisrael, in general, by brachas, it could go either way, but I'm guaranteeing you by Birchas Kohanim, Ani Avarechem. You do it 100% guaranteed. These two approaches seem to have underlying them the question of how exactly does Birchas Kohanim work? Is it a tefillah in general, or is it something called Kolach HaBracha? Mean that there is a certain power out there that perhaps some people have, maybe everybody has, that I can give you a bracha, alti birchas hejav kal beinecha. A person should not take a bracha lightly. So there is something called perhaps kolacha bracha, that I have the ability to bless you. And just the fact that I want you to be blessed is enough of a reason that you'll have a certain degree of blessing. So the Maharsha says, if we accept there's a concept of kolacha bracha, if we accept that one person has the ability to give a person a blessing and it'll work, unfortunately, then the flip should be true also. If I give you a bracha, you should be blessed. And therefore, if I give you an ayin hara, you should be cursed. So the second approach of the Maharsha says the reason ayin hara works is it's the flip side of a bracha. The Michtam Eliyahu has a third approach. The Miftach Eliyahu says, we all know that there is a concept of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. I shouldn't in any way cause you to sin. If I hand you a ham and cheese sandwich and you eat it, so not only is it a sin for you for eating the ham and cheese sandwich, but I too have sinned by being an enabler, by being the cause of your sin. To be jealous is a sin. However, if I drive up in a fancy car and I walk out, you know, and then I show off my wealth and I show off all of my blessing and how lucky I am, and I rub it in your face, and because of that, you are jealous, well, that's also kind of my fault. So, in fact, what the Michtav Meliyahu says is that's the reason for Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara is a lifnei iver. I caused you to be jealous. If I would have acted in a more of a modest way, if I wouldn't have flaunted my good fortune, then in fact people wouldn't have been jealous of it. Because I in fact flaunted my good fortune, that caused you to be hurt by being jealous. And that is in fact what led to the problem. That's why I am punished for it. So these are three approaches as to why Ayin Hara works. Again, approach number one, the Arachayim, it's the audit approach. Approach number two is the Marsha, it's the Kolach HaBracha approach. And approach number three is the Michtam Eliyahu, it's the Lifnei Iver approach. All three of these happen to be minority opinions. While people might like them, I mean, there might be good logic behind it, people will be shocked by, I think, what the major approach among the Balei Machshava is. It appears in Parshas Vayera. We read yesterday in Shul, Vayashtem Avram Baboka v'ikach lechem v'chei masmayim v'yitein el hagar sam al shechma v'es hayelad yayish al cheha v'ater v'teisa b'midbar be'er sheva. We all know that at one point, Sarah goes to Avram and says, listen, this Yishmael kid is bad news. Bad news in general. He's bad news for our son Yitzhak. He's got to go. And with that, Avram at first, of course, is not excited at first, but, and afterwards, after you have that, eventually HaKadosh Baruch tells him, no, she's right, and he gets sent away. This pasuk here, which describes him being sent away, is a little bit odd. It says Avram gets up in the morning, and he took some bread, and he took a jug of water, and he put it on top of Hagar and the child, and he sent them on the way to Midbar Be'er Sheva. What's "and the child"? That's a little unclear. Right? So Rashi says, you know what? Some shechma ve'es hayelad. Not only did he put the water and the bread on her shoulders, but also Yishmael went on her back. How old is Yishmael now? Yishmael is a teenager. Why is she carrying him? So Rashi says, "Afa yelad samal shechma shechnisa basara sara ayin hara b'chazaso chama v'yiro yachol lelech baraglav." Sara gave Yishmael an ayin hara that led him to becoming sick, and now he couldn't walk. The Mizrahi, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, in his Perish on Rashi, on his super commentary, as they call it, he asks a very interesting question. The Gemara tells us as follows: Ad Yaakov lo havi chulsha. Up until the point of Yaakov Avinu, no one ever got sick. Now we have an understanding that originally, when man was created, man did not age. Man always looked the same. And Avram Avinu, eventually, when he saw that his son Yitzchak looked just like him, and people got confused between the two of them, he said, maybe we should do something about this. So aging began. And we see in next week's parsha that Avram ages, and now you can tell the difference. When we see that Yaakov is sick, that's a chiddush also. People never got sick before him. They just dropped dead. That was the end of it. It was good news for the Chevra Kadisha, bad news, Dr. Burns, for the doctors. What am I going to tell you? There was no sickness. There was no need for the medical profession. And in fact, the Gemara goes on to say that until Elisha, people got sick, but they never got better. So what happened here? Yishmael gets sick, right? Rashi tells us that Yishmael was so sick he couldn't walk. Put her on the back. And not only that, but then he gets better. So this Rashi is against the Gemara. The Gemara says no one ever got sick until Yaakov Avinu. So here people are getting sick, A. And B, on top of that, not only do we see someone get sick, but we see that he eventually gets better as well. So the Mizrahi offers the following approach. The Mizrahi says, yes, up until Yaakov Avinu, no one got sick. And up until the point of Elisha, no one ever got better. But if someone accidentally cut themselves, they still got a boo-boo. And if I punched you in your nose, you still got a broken nose. And eventually it healed. There was perhaps no viruses, no bacteria, no disease. But if somebody could get hurt, right, naturally, if I hit you with a baseball bat, that hurt you. That's not sickness, though. So to ayin hara, that's not a sickness. That's a physical damaging of the other person. If I go there and I punch you in the nose, you are hurt. So too, in the event that I give you an ayin hara, that is the same as punching you in the nose. That is a physical way of damaging somebody. Believe it or not, this is the majority opinion. If you look at the Abarbanel in his Perish on Shmuel, this is just one of many examples where he begins to explain. Right? Inyan hezek ayin hara kumo shekosa fil filosofu, as the philosophers tell you, she yetsu min ha'ayin ketzatz idim mehamoshim asher yidchem ateva. Sparks fly out of a person's eye when I look at you a certain way, and that hurts the person. That does damage. V'zeh meha'ish bal ha'nefesh ha'ra'a ha'kina'is. The person who is a jealous person, right? When he looks this way, u'la'arisus osam ha'idem yifo b'dor mu'chon li'kvol osam ha'polo. and from the poison that comes out of the way I'm looking at the person, that damages the person. The belief of the Abarbanel, the belief of the Rav Elio Mizrahi, the, believe it or not, majority opinion by far, is that ayin hara is something that is natural. It's no difference than me punching you in the nose. If I punch you in the nose, that hurts you, right? You think about it. If I punch you in the nose, who does the Avera? I did the Avera. Who's hurt? You. Right? If I kill someone, I did the Avera, you get hurt. Ayin hara, I did the Avera, but you get hurt. That is the approach of the Abarbanel. Interesting. There are many, many sources I could point you to if you're interested in seeing more on this. But I just point you to one that, really took me by surprise when I saw it. Look at the Torah Tamima wrote two Sfarim on the Chumash. One is the Torah Tamima, which is the popular one, but he also has a sefer called Tosefes Bracha. Tosefes Bracha was sort of a collection of articles he wrote in the newspaper about the Parsha. So in Parshas Balak, a good time to speak about Ayin Hara, he goes and he raises this issue. He then quotes the following. When I originally read this Tosefes Brachas, I remember it well. I was on an LL flight. So I didn't have my Sfarim with me. I was just shocked. He said, Yankish Anashima Sholo Libam Holech Lamin Bakoach Shlitas Ayin Me'odam Rab Pulas L'Ra. He said, there are a lot of people out there, you know, who don't believe that scientifically an Ayin Hara can hurt you. Therefore, I'm bringing you a story that will prove it. He's quoting here a some sort of newspaper that was published in Russia in 1881. He gives you the Meir Makomos. And he tells you, he says, this is the article he read in the paper. The scientists of the time which were trying to figure out, is this really true? Can somehow the Ayin Hara have a physical, biological effect on the unpeople? And they went and they went and they the academy did a study of it. There was a person that was on death row. So the Academy for Sciences. They said, listen, you're going to kill this guy anyhow. Would you mind if we borrowed him to do certain studies on him? Not surprisingly, the government of Russia was very open to giving over the person on death row that to allow them to do whatever exactly they wanted to do about it. Okay. So what did they do to this guy? They starved this guy for 3 days. And then? Then they put a loaf of bread for this guy who hadn't eaten for 72 hours, just beyond his reach, where he could stare at it, but he couldn't get to it. This guy stared at it wantingly, and the poison came from his eyes because he was dying of starvation. They then, after there is, took the loaf of bread, they cut it in half and they saw that it was full of poison. And based on this, they proved, of course, that the Ayin Hara caused this to happen. As I first read this Tosefes Bracha, I said, there is no way, if there is an article, I've got to be able to find it. So Taka was flying on LL back from Eretz Yisrael, so the next morning I was up around 4 in the morning with jet lag. So I figured this would be a good opportunity to start doing some research. And I actually found this article quoted elsewhere in a scientific journal. So number 12, I give you the Archives of Ophthalmology from 1937, where Dr. Benjamin Gordon wrote an article on oculus facinus, the evil eye. And he quotes this: a striking illustration of this belief is that food may be poisoned by the glands of the fascinated was reported in the Russian paper Ilustrovsky Mirror in 1881. Quotes the same article quoted by the Torah Tamima. And he says that the Russian government turned over a convict sentenced to die to the Academy of Science for the purpose of testing the powers of the evil eye. The prisoner was starved for 3 days, during which a loaf of bread was placed in front of him, of which he was unable to partake. At the end of the third day, the bread was examined and found to contain poisonous substance. I mean, neither of these are the original Russian, but the translation seems to be exact, both to the Hebrew and to the English. What does that prove? So I'm not a scientist, but there are several issues out there. One issue that I personally wondered was this Ilustrovsky Mirror isn't exactly a scientific journal. It sounds it's more the equivalent of the modern day New York Post. So one has got to wonder if the Academy of Science really did a study, why would it publish it there? That's question number one. The other point is Dr. Gordon also points to. He says the story does not prove anything. The bread might have been spoiled by being kept in a damp cell for 3 days. That's a fair point. But he, in fact, is amazed, Dr. Gordon, that even as recently as 1881, that was 1937 was closer to 1881 than we are to 1937. He said even at that point, people still very much believed in Ayin Hara. So it's interesting that we have here this idea that the majority opinion is that Ayin Hara is something natural. Now, of course, scientifically, I don't think we believe that. This is not something that we understand. But in fact, it is something that is the majority opinion. Now, with that in mind, if we understand it that way, we have, of course, certain practical ramifications, lehalacha. So, for example, let's take a look at the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim discusses an idea which is not exactly the same, but is similar, and that is zugos. That the Gemara tells us that somehow if someone gets involved in zugos, if I do two of something, if I eat two of something, etc., that leads to the Shadim coming. The demons come, and that's bad news for the Jews. So the Gemara wants to know, well, what about the Arba Kosos? Arba Kosos, two cups before the Suda, two cups after the Suda. Why aren't we worried about Zugos? So the Gemara doesn't say, because the whole thing's a crock, which, you know, I thought would be a more of a reasonable approach. But rather it says as follows. It says, Klolo de milsa kol de kapit kapti bahadayu. With the low kapit, low kapti bahadayu. He said, it all depends. He says, if you are makbid, right? If I worry about zugos, then they'll bother me. It's like the bully in school. If you don't let them know that it bothers you, they'll leave you alone. That's what the Gemara says. And Rashi explains, kol de kapit yosem idai kapti bahadayu ashen waziko. If I'm really concerned about it, then the Shadim are going to go after me. The lo kapti kol kach, I'm not that concerned about it. Lo kapti badai raziko, they won't bother you either. But you always have to be a little careful. You know, you don't have to be crazy about it. But you do have to be careful about it. That's the general idea. The question is, can I say the same thing about Ayin Hara? A lot of people are very concerned about Ayin Hara. A lot of people have their chamsa with them wherever they go, right? A lot of people assume that Ayin Hara is a real thing. But I personally, I'm not concerned about it. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but Ayin Hara will never harm me. Can I say that? So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on the topic. If you take a look at Moshe number 15, he says, "Be'inyan Ayin Hara vada yesh lachush." He said, yeah, don't ignore Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara is definitely a thing. However, But Moshe says, "Avol ein lahakpid hargei pi bedavarim ke'elu hakal mandalo kapidlo kapdino nadayu." But he says, but the same rule that applies by Zugos, you can apply it here. If it doesn't really bother you, don't worry about it so much. You don't got to get so ay-ay-ay when it comes to it. Moshe in general, as you might have guessed, wasn't so excited about these things that were overly supernatural that didn't appear clearly in the Gemara. But they point about Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. A lot of people have a concern based on the Tzavos Rabbi Yehuda Chassid that you should not marry a girl that has the same name as your mother. You shouldn't marry a boy that has the same name as your father. So they point out that Rabbi Moshe Feinstein had three daughters. They all got married. They all got married to boys named Moshe. So obviously, Rabbi Moshe wasn't that concerned about it. Right? So to here, you don't got to be that makbid on it. The truth of the matter is that this approach of Rabbi Moshe is probably not so much the majority approach. Let's look at the Torah Tamima. The Torah Tamima, who also wrote the Tosefes Bracha, but the Torah Tamima also wrote the Torah Tamima. That's where he got his name. It says, if I'm very, very involved in supernatural acts, black magic, whatever, it's going to rub off on me. He said, what's the reason for this? He said, it's a psychological type of thing that sometimes, you know, there are people out there that they very much focus on one thing and then they see it everywhere, right? I'm very into conspiracies. I'm very into conspiracies. So everything's a conspiracy, right? I'm very into anti-Semitism. Everything's anti-Semitism, right? That call in the football game, anti-Semitism. Everything's anti-Semitism. That's everything. So that's the story. He says that's what really the Torah Tamima says. If you focus on conspiracies, you're only going to see conspiracies. You're going to focus on everything's anti-Semitism. Whatever I focus on, that's what it is. Right? So he says, so if I'm always focused on these ideas of what have you not, of Shadim, it's always the Shadim. I have a Dybbuk in my locker and it's all the Dybbuk's fault, what's going on. Therefore, it's gonna make him crazy. Okay, so he says that in fact, you know, that's the idea of these things. Just don't focus on it so much. It's not a matter if I ignore it, it's gonna ignore me. But if I don't focus it, it won't make me crazy. People are familiar with Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky, he should live and be well, is well known as one of the leading Torah minds of our generation. Rav Chaim Kanievsky is the son of the Stipler Gaon, and Rav Chaim Kanievsky is also known for a man of being a man of few words. There's a sefer called Ayin Hara Be'in HaYahadut, where this fellow wrote a book on Ayin Hara, and then as he did it, he ran around and he asked people for their opinions about various issues he had in Ayin Hara. He went to Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky and he asked him the following question. Sheila, Nafitz b'inyan Ayin Hara, ki mi she'eno choshesh heimena eino mezika oso. So many people believe when it comes to Ayin Hara, if you ignore it, if you don't bother it, it won't bother you. V'asmachu al hada aminim b'mesechus p'sachim l'inyan zugos called the milso called the kapi kapti b'adayu v'dro kapi lo kapti adayu. And this is based on the idea that we have by Zugos. They apply it here as well. The person asks, but wait a second, that's talking about Shadim. We're talking about the nature of Shadim. Shadim, you know, if you don't bother them, they don't bother you. They're like the bully in school. You ignore him, he'll go away. He won't get his hand off from bothering you. But what does that have to do with Ayin Hara? What does that have to do with this? Right? What if I like to tell and share the following story that one time I worked also for the Beis Din of America, a wonderful organization. And one time, it was around this time of year, and we were middle of a Din Torah. It was around 4 or 4:30. And it was time for mincha. So we had three dayanim, and we pulled together 10 people. And the fellow that is Masader Gittin in the RCA, he was there also. He's a Satra Chassid. So we said to him, no, we're going to daven Mincha. You want to daven with us? He says, no, I'm going home to Williamsburg now. I'll daven when I get there. You'll daven when you get there. Shkia is in 15 minutes. How long is it going to take you to get there? He said, I'm not scared from the Shkia. The Shkia doesn't scare me. So what is the? You can't say that. I'm not scared of the Shkia. Right? The guy goes, he punches me in the nose. I'm not Makabel. What do you mean not Makabel? I don't worry about it. I'm not into being punched. How can you say that? Right? It's one thing, you know, if you ignore them, you ignore them, but you can't just ignore something that happens. So that's what Reb Chaim Kanievsky says. V'heshev a girl Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Ein shayach l'ayin hara. Lo shemati v'eino nacham. No. You can't ignore the ayin hara. What does it mean you ignore the ayin hara? You ignore the ayin hara? You can't ignore it. It is what it is. It's like I'm ignoring being punched in the nose. You can't. There's no such thing as ignoring it. So that is the point that he makes. Now, this comes up practically. A question that comes up from time to time in yeshiva is as follows. You have fellows in yeshiva that are Baalei Tshuva, right? That they're wonderful Talmidim, they weren't in the base medrash, but their parents aren't from Nunu. More power to them. A grandparent dies, right? The father, he isn't the shul yid. He doesn't go to shul. The son goes to Davins three times a day. So the son says, should I say Kaddish for my grandparent? So you look at the Ma'aril. The Ma'aril deals with this question. And the Ma'aril says that, in fact, you have a right to do it. However, he says, if your parents care about this, then don't say the Kaddish. If your parents aren't makbid, then you can say the Kaddish. This is quoted the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. Right, with the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah quotes this Ma'aril and says the following, that in general, the minhag is that somebody who Baruch Hashem is blessed to have two living parents does not say Kaddish. However, if the parents say that they're not makbid, you have a right to, you can say Kaddish, right? So in a case like this, where you're going to say Kaddish on behalf of the father, on behalf of the mother, right, for the grandparent, where this is something that you see all the time in yeshiva. A guy is saying Kaddish, and he asks him, oh, no, no, no. He explains it's a grandparent. So in these cases, right, then it would seem that if they're not makbid. So what does that seem to indicate? It seems to indicate that the halacha is the right to say that. I'm not worried about ayin hara. There's a stira, however. We all know that the halacha is that we don't call up for aliyahs relatives back to back. Look at number 19. He said, Yochom likros beis achim ze achar ze va bein achar ava ve'in menichin ela b'shvil ayin hara. Technically, it says there's no reason why you can't call two brothers for an aliyah one after another, or you can't call a father after a son. However, it's an ayin hara. What's an ayin hara? People are going to turn around, they're going to say, look! Look at this family. They get all the aliyahs, right? They're the big donors. They get the aliyahs, right? You name it, right? They get Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, whatever they want, they get. People are, this guy, Moshe Gross. So because of that, people are going to be jealous. That's the reason why we don't allow them to get two aliyahs back to back. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Mishnah Berurah says, well, what if the guy says, well, I'm not makbid, right? Baruch Hashem, we have a bar mitzvah in the family. And because we have a bar mitzvah in the family, we, you know, I need a lot of aliyahs. So what am I going to do? So I said, listen, I'm not worried about the ayin hara. I need to give the grandparents, I need to give the uncles, I need to give the cousins. I'll take all the aliyahs and I won't worry about it. So the Mishnah Berurah says, even if the person says, ayin hara doesn't bother me, right? Doesn't matter. Says, even in that case, you know, I can't have it. You can't say, I'll live with the ayin hara, thank you very much. But wait a second, doesn't there seem to be a theory here? On the one hand, we say, by the aliyahs, you can't say I'm not makbid, but when it comes to the Kaddish, you can say I am makbid. I think the answer is as follows. I think the answer is that these aren't two cases of ayin hara. People confused the idea of what ayin hara is and they over-apply it. Right? Everyone knows that, let's say there's a wheelchair and, you know, a kid sits down because they're tired. The parents are young, kids sit in a wheelchair, it's an ayin hara. So the truth of the matter is that's not an ayin hara. It's not a good thing, but it's not an ayin hara. What it means is as follows. There's a concept of al tiftach peh l'satan. Right? You shouldn't give the satan any ideas. Right? This is a gemara. This isn't something that was made up. Right? Al tiftach peh l'satan means that if a person is sitting in working with crutches or a person is sitting in a wheelchair, the satan says, you know what? Maybe that's not such a bad idea. If a person is saying Kaddish, people will be murmuring. Did that person lose a parent? Satan will say, that's not such a bad idea. And chas v'shalom, it could lead to something terrible happening. So an al tiftach peh l'satan, that's nothing to do with jealousy. Right? No one's going to be jealous of me because I'm saying Kaddish. So an al tiftach peh l'satan, that I have a right to say, I'm not machbin. No, I'm not so worried about it. It's like shadim. It's okay. However, I'm going to take all the aliyahs. People are going to be jealous of me. That, in fact, really is a problem. That really is an ayin hara. So that, in fact, is something that we do have to be careful about. Bottom line is ayin hara. So whether it's a spiritual thing or not, you know, I put that aside. But I think the lesson of ayin hara could not be more valuable than it is today. I think the idea out there that perhaps it would be appropriate for the Jews not to be so in your face in terms of showing off our wealth and our success. Baruch Hashem, we've been exceptionally successful in this country, and we are very grateful to the country and are grateful to Kadosh Baruch Hu. But our flaunting our success, our making very large weddings, our building large houses, our what have you nots, that's not a good idea. I think we've learned a little bit too much over the last 6 months that the size of Jewish weddings can lead to tremendous anti-Semitism. And, you know, whether the people are right or wrong for pointing the finger at it doesn't really matter, because the bottom line is that is what's happening. So I think the basic, simple idea of ayin hara is something that we should very much keep in mind. We should live in a way that does not make people jealous, that does not do anything to provoke. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, if we are blessed with money, we should be happy that we have food on our table, we have a roof over our head, we have the ability to help out other people, to give tzedakah, you keep money in the bank. But to live a certain lifestyle, the halachas of ayin hara could not be more appropriate. Thank you very much.